This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out Braintree and their V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more and try out the sandbox, go to braintreepayments.com/currentgeek.
I have
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frogs Pants All-Stars. Frogs Pants, geeks the world in you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. Guy with the gavel is Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Tom Merritt. You're right about that.
You have to say sorry and what's some other Canadian words? I should ask what? One of our guests because
I need to translate my greetings into Canadian.
Yeah, the whole thing today.
By the way, before we get to the guest, yeah. Do you see that big gavel there in the background
on the
video?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a gift at Dragon Con.
What?
I had to have it shipped back to me. But wow, thank you so much.
That's amazing.
To the person who made that.
You don't have the name. We don't have a name to pimp here.
I don't know if I want to embarrass them.
Oh, well, you know.
Tell me if it's okay if I embarrass you in front of everyone, and I will totally embarrass you.
Right. And Tom's
email me.
Tom's wife works for YouTube. There's all our disclaimers. Get that out of the way.
And my wife didn't make that. But it's a huge Gavel McLeod. It says Gavel McLeod, and it's got lights on the back of it.
Whoa.
To like give it accent, if you can tell.
That's awesome,
amazing.
Dude.
So cool.
Very cool. And what better place than Dragon Con for such a thing? Because that's all about props and costumes and stuff. So congratulations. Anyway, it's good to be here. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. It is Current Geek. We have guests. That means two of them today. And I'm going to start with a newcomer to the show. His name is Bo Schwartz. A lot of people know him as Gorath, the unstoppable force in the Heroes of the Storm game. If you are up against him, you're dead. If you're with him, you win. He's also the co-host of the brand new Core show that airs this weekend with myself and our other guest. Bo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Tom. I'm super thrilled to be here. It's kind of a dream come true. Ever since episode one, I've listened to the show and said, I'd really love to be a guest on Current Geek. And you know what? Dreams can happen. And I'm super thrilled to be here and see what the place looks like on the inside.
It's very listen beautiful. To that, kids. Yeah. Set your dreams low enough and you can achieve them.
Is it the Canadian dream? Because we have an American dream, but I don't know. What's the Canadian dream look like? Do you guys have a version of that?
I don't know. I consume so much American culture that I forget that I'm Canadian. I'm somewhat indoctrinated, so sure. I'm a bad person to ask about things.
Well,
I thought the Canadian dream was pretty much the same as ours, but like 2 days earlier.
And free healthcare at the same time.
The Canadian dream is going fishing.
All right.
Yeah. Sounds good, actually.
This is a Montana dream, it turns out. Anyway, it's good to have you here. He's a huge nerd and perfect for the show, and we're stoked to have you. Also joining us, a return appointment. It's a three-peat from John Jagger, returning guest, co-host of Core also, co-host of Azeroth Roundtable, NVIDIA stream with me on Saturdays, all kinds of other stuff. John, welcome back.
It's good to be here. They say third time's the charm, and we're going to put that to the test today.
That puts you in an exclusive group of three-peaters.
I know. I can't wait to get my football clock.
Yeah. And if you're
John, in your case, third time's charming.
That's right. By the way, little word to the wise, if you're in a room surrounded by three-peaters, get out of there. Get out of there quick. All right, here we go. We're going to jump right into the headlines. Right now.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, I made a wiener joke there with the three Peters there.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was about wieners.
Because it's three. Got it. Hey, JMZ668 wanted us to talk about a report from the Broadband Opportunity Council. There's a transition for you. That council is chaired by the heads of the U.S. Departments of Commerce. And agriculture, not Herbert Hoover, though. Why did he want us to talk about this? Because the report says internet service, quote, has steadily shifted from an optional amenity to a core utility and is now taking its place alongside water, sewer, and electricity as essential infrastructure for communities. So I think he wants our opinion on that statement. The report recommends things like making it easier for private companies to roll out infrastructure. For instance, they want to create a federal database of telecommunication towers that can be used, make it easier to get permits, do a dig once policy so that fiber or fiber conduit is put in anytime streets are dug up for any purpose, so it's easy for others to lay fiber later, stuff like that.
Well, this seems like smart, progressive thinking. And one thing that I would, that would make me a little bit nervous about all of this talk is that while I agree with all of it, I think it absolutely is a core utility now. And that shift was not only steady but rapid, and I think so rapid, in fact, that there are probably certain political factions with certain proclivities against anything that someone sees as a more of a more as a human right and less as a optional thing you got to pay for.
Well, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. For those who say, wait a minute, the internet shouldn't be a utility, I'm against this report, keep in mind, the report isn't saying, and therefore it should be governed like the telephone or heavily regulated. What the report's saying is, this is something as essential as electricity and water, so let's figure out how to make it easy to roll out. And I would invite you to look at the report, because in this particular case, there's no additional regulations of the internet being proposed. Mm-hmm. What is being proposed is making it easy for private companies to build infrastructure.
Which seems smart and pro-competitive and all of that stuff. Bo, do you have an opinion on this? Land of Cox is where you're from. Boy, I just can't stop today.
Boy, that Joe.
I don't even know the reference except for Cox.
Don't you guys have, it's Rogers. You guys have Rogers.
We have internet. Rogers, and we have Bell, and we've got TELUS. We've got all kinds of different companies here.
And Shaw.
Shaw's another one.
I want to chime in and say I have Cox, but I feel like it would be misunderstood. And so,
do you use Cox for your cable?
I do.
I feel 12 today. This is the best day of my life. All right. Well, but the idea of government taking a more proactive approach to infrastructure and not so much regulation of the internet itself. I mean, Bo, that seems like a right idea.
So in our lifetime, we've seen internet be like a luxury to like a staple of living, where it's so important. It's almost more important than it's not more important than electricity, but just it's a vital life service. And and we've seen I've seen people, 10 years ago go, internet, that's stupid, what are you doing on it, to now saying, oh, you need it to get a job, you need it to function. Mm-hmm. So I think we're always feeling like we're behind on all of this. Like every time you hear an article saying like, yeah, we need to think ahead and create infrastructure, it's like, why aren't we doing that already? Hurry it up.
It does feel like to some people their memories are long enough to go, well, we just spent all that money on figuring out how to make the copper work better, and now you're telling me we need to put a bunch of fiber optic in the streets. And there are people here who are opposed to a lot of different kinds of internet proposals, although Google Fiber's coming here or technically is already here in Provo. And a lot of that stuff seems to be dropping. But for years, people fought it and just saw it as this bloated, expensive thing that none of us were ever going to need more than a meg and a half download speeds from their DSL. And that changed so quickly that now I feel like municipalities like ours are having to change that. What's it like in Phoenix these days? Other than it being 300,000 degrees and no one should live there.
Well, I'm actually in a real unique position where I'm extremely sad, because I moved out of where I was living probably about a month before they started putting in the fiber optics all under there. And so I'm now just back on regular cable internet, and I have to, look at my family and say, well, I'm glad you guys get to benefit from that.
Yeah.
I sure wish I could have.
Yeah.
But I think it's the direction it's going, right? I mean, it's clear that is the path we're going. Now, technologies change, obviously, who knows where we're going to be, but I think it's important to start thinking about these things before it's critical.
Tom, is that the reason why people worry about this stuff? Because the technology does change, and who knows, in 10 years, pineapples are broadcasting all our internet. We don't need fiber anymore.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of one problem with having the government get into the business of making it easy to lay out infrastructure, is if they make it easy to lay out infrastructure we don't need anymore, right?
Right.
So if suddenly wireless communication is created that has no lag and is much cheaper to be installed, then making people who are digging up roads put in all this conduit ends up being useless. However, I personally think that there's always going to be a need for some kind of backhaul, some kind of fiber. So the conduit thing, I would want to see how much additional cost, labor, and time it adds to the process of building roads before I would make a judgment, because I think it's probably a good idea if that's not terribly significant. I do think that making telecommunication towers easier to get permits to string lines and making it easier to find them and be able to plan is essential. Because the one thing that the incumbents, both the wireless communication providers and the landline providers, have done is work to make it really hard to compete with them. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of cases, it's justifiable. Hey, we spent the money to put up these poles. We're not going to let anybody else use them. That would be stupid. I get that. But in some cases, they have done other things. They've lobbied governments for particular rules to prevent competition. And anything that prevents competition in this space, which is already so cost intensive already that it's difficult to compete. Anything that makes that even harder is bad for everybody.
Yeah. The only other final thing I would say is that, and while I haven't read this report, so I'm no expert, but it does feel like a win-win on the consumer side and a corporate side. It seems like it gives incentives to the corporate side to build out and do cooler things and compete. And it seems like we all want better broadband options. So yeah. Hopefully whatever comes of this is good for us.
Now, TV's Egon in the chat room said that I'm on Cox right now. So I asked him, I had heard Cox sucks. Is that true? And he said, my Cox never disappoints. So apparently Cox broadband is useful for TV's Egon.
Yeah, it is. I agree with a straight face. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine.
Yeah. EFC88 sent us the news that Netflix knows when viewers become hooked on a series by looking at all the data. They can tell you when people commit to binge watching. They released data on 25 popular series on the site and the episode number after which 70% of the audience kept watching the rest of the season. That was their benchmark. So for House of Cards, after episode 3, 70% of the people watching kept watching. After Better Call Saul, it was episode 4. Daredevil, episode 5, aka the one where there's kissing.
Oh my gosh, that's true, isn't it? It's they stuck around after where the guy got impaled in the head with that street deal. Oh, spoilers, everyone. Okay, so I'm going to throw this one to John. John, back in the day, Knight Rider would come on. Minute, you know, that would come on.
Yeah.
And people would watch Knight Rider, and they'd have a Nielsen box, and it would be over there cooking away saying, oh, they're watching Knight Rider. Okay, NBC for the win. Thumbs up. But the whole episode, what they didn't know is that Dad was in the garage trying to find that pesky screwdriver, and Mom was taking a dump, right? So they missed the entire episode. And they don't really have data there. Today, Netflix and every other streaming service, they have actual metrics. They can tell how long of an episode you, specifically with your username, watched, how many episodes you watched, how many times you watched it over. Did you start it again a couple of times? Like, what did you do down to the micron of time? That seems so valuable. Yet, does it creep you out at all that they know exactly what it takes to hook you on something and keep you there?
No, I'm all for it. Because if I'm hooked on it, I like it. So, I mean, it's not like they're, you know, coming over to my house and saying like, hey, we've decided you might like hardcore drugs. So here's hardcore drugs. It's just, hey, we know what you might like in television. Why don't we give you some of that? Mm. And I say, sure, absolutely. Bring it on.
So you don't do you feel guinea piggy at all, Bo, about sitting there being the metric for how they decide what shows people will or won't watch? Because that is what's happening. We are the real time test subjects. I'm taking devil's advocate here because I think this stuff is awesome, but you know what I mean.
I'm growing increasingly mistrustful. I love television. I binge watch stuff all the time. I'm like clearly who they're talking about in this article. The problem is that these companies are very big. They employ behavioral scientists who, you know, are figuring out how to get that dopamine loop just perfected so that, you know, we do become addicted even though it isn't drugs. And drug dealers won't tell you that their drugs aren't addictive. They'll say, hey, it's really addictive and it's fun. And so Netflix is like, look how addictive Netflix is. Isn't this great? It's so much fun and you get to watch it.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to have a conversation about, should we be pushing so hard to manipulate our brains in such a way that our services make us want to do things that we otherwise shouldn't? So I think it's interesting information. That's the first thing that came to mind when I read the article was like, wow, they do really know what they're doing, and I'm sure their stakeholders are very happy about that.
Yeah.
But our communities, you know, when do we start having the conversation about these guys are getting too good at what they're doing?
Yeah, and you can see like your average, you know, I wonder, they probably have data on all this stuff, but like some, you know, 13-year-old kids like, what's this lesbian section about? Beep, beep, and they want to go in there and look and see what's going on, right? Well, they have data on every click you make, everything you do, stuff you do watch, stuff you don't watch, stuff you started and didn't mean to. Like, Tom, take me down from my tower of conspiracy here. Why am I so freaked out?
If you want an excellent, informed discussion of what is actually addiction, I highly recommend listening to Wendy Dunford on the morning stream.
Wait, I know that name.
she can make all of these things clear about what's actually addictive, what isn't, and what the dangers are. I can't remember when it was. It wasn't that long ago, a couple months ago, that she was on and did a really good segment. I'm not that she always does really good segments.
Yeah, she did. Addiction.
So
was
I'm not
going
to get into like are these things really addictive or not. I will leave that to the professionals related to Scott. I will say that Netflix's point on this was actually a little bit contrary to what you guys are talking about. What they're saying is television isn't addictive as much as you would think. That's why we have to release full seasons. We think it's better to release full seasons because people enjoy that more because they're willing to maybe watch two or three episodes rather than waiting a week. If they waited a week, they may not watch it at all. So if you want people to get, you know, the best experience, you give them multiple episodes at once. Because most of these episodes, it wasn't till the third, fourth, and in a couple of cases, the eighth episode before people really continued to watch it. I don't think this is Netflix showing how addictive their service is or how much television is addictive. Personally, no, I think this is them saying like, hey, the binge model, much better than that broadcast model where they make you wait a week between everything.
Go ahead, yeah. Bro.
I agree that it isn't about the addictiveness and the binge model, but to me, the idea is that Netflix is still doing, the paradigm is still television episodes, which is, you know, tune in next week, here's a cliffhanger, here's a comeback, here's a reward for watching. You know, why does everything have to look like films and television? I'm kind of like, isn't there a new format or something, like an extended
film? Isn't there something that's less enjoyable?
Do we have to?
Doesn't make me want to continue watching it? It's sort of what I feel like you're saying.
Well, in
like,
a way, though.
I'm saying, why does it have to be 40-minute chunks or an hour-and-a-half film?
Well, it doesn't, though. Whereas that's the brilliance of Netflix. Their shows, if you've noticed, are all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, they're writing chapters of books. And book chapters, you know, they can be any length, but they tend to be... there's a chapter length that we're all kind of used to. And I think that's what Netflix is finding right now. They're like, hey, our hour long series can sometimes be 40 minutes, sometimes be an hour 10. You know, we can play around with that. And you can watch as many chapters of this as you want.
Yeah. And Netflix may not be the place for the switch to other more weird forms of timing and or the way content rolls out. That's probably happening on YouTube right now. I think that's where people are experimenting. They're figuring out editing techniques / length decisions or whatever based on completely different criterias. And they're seeing what works and what doesn't work. And a lot of it is working now. There are lots of new forms of entertaining people that no one thought would work and probably still wouldn't work. You know, it's not like Netflix is going to launch a show that is just a square of a guy's face at the bottom corner and a game of Minecraft happening in real time the way that we can get away with on Twitch and on YouTube. But also, Netflix's crowd is a very different crowd. It's a bunch of, working adults, aged 18 to 49 who...
Yeah, and Netflix is for old people.
Yeah, it kind of is, in a way.
I mean, I still think of this conversation. I was hearing these two young YouTubers when I was at the YouTube space talking about how the guy was like, you know, I actually do watch Netflix sometimes. I just have it on in the background when I'm doing other things. And the girl was like, oh, no, not me. I'm just YouTube all the time.
Yeah.
It was like he was trying to sound mature by saying he watched Netflix.
Yeah, occasionally I put an old VCR together and put a tape in there. But
I mean, not to undermine your point about the addictiveness, I just think that's an entirely different issue and probably has less to do with what Netflix is doing and more about the compulsive behavior of people.
Yeah, well, they're showing this is where you get, like, we know when it is you get hooked, so you can't be dismissive of something just because you didn't enjoy the first episode.
Yeah, that's
true. Which is the main takeaway. But it makes me think, I'm like, who are all the people studying this stuff and what are they up to?
Yeah, it still makes you, it makes me think of that stuff too. But moreover, it's just they figured out a way to micromanage what to spend money on, really. Because this is them saying, well, we made this sci-fi series. We don't know if it's going to go well because we don't have any data. So we'll just put it out there. And it's a huge risk in the old model. And this model, it's not so much of a risk. They know what people are into. And so talk of, you know, genre fiction type stuff coming to Netflix, Amazon, and otherwise that you don't even think of as like, well, that's not a thing I'd see on normal and network televisions because it's too risky for them to try it without really knowing the payoff. Netflix knows the payoff And so if they're willing to invest $100 million in a new series, it's because they know that the genre is going to do well, or their audience already likes this stuff. And then they spend the time with the right talent, writers, and everything else. And then they win. And we've never been able to do that in history before. So it's not so much they're tailoring things to get us in. I think they're just making stuff we want. But I'm with you. I want to see this room full of monkeys that are getting all the data, and I want to see what they're doing.
How dare they make a show that's too good? So good we can't accept it.
Someday, Netflix, you'll make a show that's too good, yeah. And you'll regret it.
You're going to hate yourselves. Anyway.
Man, speaking of too good, the submissions on the subreddit this week were fantastic. Thanks, you guys. Currentgeek.reddit.com. Keep it coming. KillaCharlie12 submitted an older story. It's from August, but it caught a lot of you Reddit readers' attention. The article describes the use of counterweights called tuned mass dampers, or TMDs, that keep super tall skyscrapers from swaying in the wind. Essentially, they're huge 300 to 800 ton steel balls suspended inside a building. It's usually one big, huge sphere inside the building. On Saturday, August 8th, the ball at Taipei 101, a former tallest building in the world, swung a full meter to counteract 100 mile per hour winds.
So it's like the BB-8 technology, isn't it? It's like a little ball down there, a little weighted thing. I mean, it's not magnets and stuff, but you know what I mean? Like,
and it has no head.
Yeah, but it, but it's literally doing that physics thing, which is keeping things upright. That's crazy to me.
It's less of a structural thing and more of a motion control thing is what they say. It's like it really wouldn't help the building stay up.
Yeah.
The swaying is actually normal. But when it sways too much, people can get motion sickness inside a skyscraper.
Oh my gosh, really? I've never even heard of that. That's crazy. John, there are skyscrapers somehow in Phoenix where no one should live because it's too hot. So we don't know where they put this ball, right? Is it just hanging? Where do balls hang?
There was a diagram showing it somewhere towards the top or mid to top. I don't remember exactly, but it's not in the base.
Okay, so it's not like some... I pictured some giant long pendulum type thing that ran through the whole building and there was like a ball.
We have that link. You could look.
Oh, look at that!
Yeah, the story shows it in the Taipei Tower, and it shows that it kind of takes up between the 87th and the 91st floor is the space that this takes
up.
That's
crazy.
And it's attached by pistons, so it's not like it swings around willy-nilly. Like, I think the pistons are a counteractive force that control its movement.
Yeah. Right, right.
I don't know much about physics, but that's what I gathered.
And they've got a video where you can see it during the high winds.
Let's see. I'm gonna play just a piece of this here. This is it looks like a giant. It's like it's suspended from four giant cords made from probably who knows what kind of steel. Wow. I don't know why that scares me so bad. That thing freaks me out. Anyway, sorry.
Well, if it fell on your toe, it would hurt.
Yeah.
It's 700 tons.
If it fell on your toe, it would crush all of you.
Yeah, we'd all be dead. Everyone within a big wide space would be dead. Fantastic.
Star Fury Zeta sent us some comparative mortality data. So far in 2015, more people have died while taking selfies than have died from shark attacks. Whoa. That would be 12 selfie-related fatalities versus 8 deaths by shark. 4 of the selfie deaths were caused by people falling while taking a selfie or being hit by a train while trying to take a selfie with a train.
No word
on fatalities caused by sharks taking selfies.
Okay, good. I was gonna ask about that.
Shark selfieception.
It is. I'm always reminded that back in like '99 or so, I remember. Well, it was just right before 9/11. There was all these reports about this huge uptick in shark deaths and attacks. And I remember thinking all these 24-hour news networks are crazy. I'm like, there's no way that the sharks are suddenly, you know, they're not rising up and coming off, onshore and trying to kill everybody. Let's get some perspective here. 9/11 came and suddenly, without notice, all of the shark attack stuff completely poofed out of, it was gone. It was not a story anymore. It was nothing. I remember in like 2002, I got curious. I went back and looked at data about shark attacks over the years. And 99 had one of the least shark attacked years of all time. So basically, we're just filling the air with crappy news. My point is, what is my point? Oh, my point is, selfies with sharks, but also we live in a selfie culture where selfie sticks and other, 8-megapixel selfie cameras were released today on iPhones. And we're obviously beefing up our selfie game. Are we also, Bo, beefing up our accidental death game?
Well, when I was reading it, the metric I wanted to know, because I was trying to take the article seriously, was what is the, you know, how many people die taking selfies versus how many people die just taking normal photographs?
Yeah. Mm.
Because if it's like 100%, then it's like, well, then stop taking selfies. But if it's a small subset of the photograph related deaths, so you could be photographing a skateboard and get the skateboard in your face and then you die, and that's, it's not a selfie. So that was the question in my mind. And I felt like this author was, you know, conveniently marginalizing sharks in order for to get page views. And he needs to check his, you know, shark racism, man. Yeah. That's not cool, bro.
Speciesism rises yes, exactly. its ugly head again.
Check your privilege.
Everyone's okay with me, you know, using shark, like portraying sharks in an angry and dangerous way in order to, you know, make this article, you know, making fun of selfies. So
I don't know if I got the right thing
out of this article either, but that was just like, that's what I wanted to know. Is everyone who's taking photographs taking selfies and we should stop, or is it just, you know, random data?
Well, you're talking about, Paul saw 12, so John, 12 deaths. There's, last I checked, 7 billion people in this world. I'm not trying to minimize any one individual's passing, but it is a very, very insignificant number compared to, say, freeway fatalities or a million other metrics you could throw around of daily deaths. Falling in the shower, that's still higher than this.
Yeah.
So why do you think they honed in? Is it just because selfies are hot?
I don't know. I think this is a author who, like me, hears about people dying taking a selfie and thinks, well, natural selection.
Well, wow. I am sort of on the side of this is BS data, especially because it's only 12 selfie related deaths. Yeah. And not to minimize those 12 people's deaths. I'm sure if they are your loved one, it's a horrible situation that they tried to take a selfie with a train and got hit by the train. That's awful.
Right.
But in the grand scheme of the 9 billion people on this planet, it's a very small percentage. I think maybe the point we could take out of this is we get so worked up about shark attacks, but we all take selfies.
Mm-hmm.
So which is more dangerous, getting into the ocean or taking a selfie?
Oh, now that you've said it that way.
Yeah, I like the way you turned it around.
What if you make duck face? What if I make shark face? Ooh, think
of
that.
This is actually a pro shark article.
Yeah, just don't make seal face. Because then you're more attractive to the shark.
And if you keep making those faces, they'll stay that way. So that's another danger you got to be careful of.
Well, that's what my mom told me.
Yeah. Magoo JC sent us the news that Minecraft is coming to Oculus Rift in spring 2016. The Windows 10 version of Minecraft will be playable on Oculus and, of course, was demoed on the Microsoft HoloLens at this year's E3. By the way, Netflix and Hulu also coming to the Oculus Gear VR available for Samsung handsets. Yeah. So we're starting to see apps, both games and not games. They had a big Oculus Connect conference this week.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. I don't know. It's the thing about the Netflix and Hulu thing is strange to me because from what I understood reading up on what happened at Connect and listening to a few people who I always follow who go to these things, it sounds like it's just going to make it so you have a giant screen in front of you. It isn't like it's necessarily, at least in the Netflix case, it's not going to necessarily recreate a movie theater where you can look to your left and see a fat guy eating popcorn or something. It's going to be just you watching a giant screen and motion controls at a minimum. That I kind of can get behind. I think that sounds really cool as an experience to have with your Gear VR. The real exciting thing here is, though, is this kind of killer app of Minecraft on Oculus natively, meaning supporting it out of the box, unlike now where it's super shoehorned in. There is support. You can play Oculus. You can put an Oculus Dev Kit 1 or 2 on your head, and you can play Minecraft, but it takes, you know, some mods and some hacks and some stuff to make it work, and even then it's not great. So I'm very curious to see how they will take a very kind of, not twitchy, but a very movement-wise, it is a very twitchy game. How are they going to make that not make John barf on his shoes? That's my goal.
Yeah, I don't want to throw up on my shoes.
Uh-uh. None of us do.
Not those shoes.
I don't want anybody else to throw up on my shoes.
I mean, those are nice shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty great.
Yeah.
I think it's great to hear that, you know, companies are throwing their weight behind VR. VR is very exciting. I have the development kit, too, and I've played around with it quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. But there are definite shortcomings right now, and I'd like to see new stuff. I don't like the screen door effect. The latency is an issue. You know, games like Elite Dangerous are playable in VR right now, and you can play for a little bit, but it gets tiring. Like, it's not, you're the opportunity cost of saying, okay, you got to wear, strap this thing on your head and be immersed in this world. Wears the after the novelty wears off, why am I still doing this activity versus a screen? And we're not quite there yet. So, but it's exciting to see more and more companies throw their weight behind it. I don't think Minecraft's going to be the killer app. I think Minecraft fans will be excited at the novelty, and that might drive some sales. But
yeah, the killer apps, I don't think we've seen yet. I'm excited about the idea that the things you mentioned, like screen dooring and latency, a lot of that stuff's been tightened up to the point that more recent showings at GDC and other conferences, E3 and whatnot, reports are that a lot of that stuff is not only resolved, but better than it's ever been. If that's true, if these devices come out and handle those issues, then you can talk about real presence in a world. You can talk about not feeling like your brain is arguing about whether you should be in there or not, which contributes a lot to people who get motion sick in these experiences. Latency is a big deal for that. And then we can get down to what are these experiences going to be like? What can you explore? What can you do? And quit looking at it like, well, the hardware's not quite good enough to give us this experience. I want to get to the place where whatever you show me in there, even if it's meant to make me sick, it's just going to work. And we're probably 5 years away from that utopia where all of this stuff's not an issue. It's just a device you put on your head and you rely on it as much as you do the monitor you have in front of you now.
And that's the kind of...
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, that's the kind of stuff that I think is cool. Like, I don't want to... There's a lot of people out there who like Minecraft. I don't want to put Minecraft down, but... You know, I've played Minecraft. It is not the experience I'm looking for virtual reality. But you talk about the thing of, you know, watching a movie on there and it projects a giant screen. That sounds amazing for someone who maybe hates travel but has to travel and they're stuck on a little airplane and feeling cramped and confined. You know, maybe being able to put this on, assuming that doesn't also make them feel that same way and feel like they're in a big room looking up at a big screen and can kind of escape from everything around them. That's the kind of stuff that gets me really excited about VR.
You don't even have to look down at a tablet or anything, right? It's just more comfortable. You could just have the thing on. It's the best of all worlds. It's the eye covers from the airplane, but a movie on a huge screen.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And I don't have PTSD, but all this talk about how they're already doing testing with those patients by putting serene. We talked about this on the show, I think. These serene experiences where they feel like they're at a beach and they can glance around and look at the surf and look at the stuff and that they're seeing tangible results from that kind of experience. That stuff's... Like, it's funny, all of the non-gaming potential for somebody who loves video games like me, way more interesting than the games for me, at least at this stage.
Yeah.
My imagination is way more interested in that.
I think I just quick counterpoint to that, too, because we talk about sereneness and you know, not being sick in these devices. To me, the most exciting experience I've had in the Oculus is there's a demo where you're in this amusement park ride that spins around and then it goes faster and faster and throws you off. Oh, and then you go and die. That's by far my favorite one.
It's not good for John's shoes, though.
You actually feel like you're getting flung. Like, you get that sense of it messes with the equilibrium in your brain, like your sense of balance, and it's marvelous. So I think there's also this, like, extreme tourism industry that's going to crop up with Oculus that personally excites me. I want to, like, fall off of giant cliffs and get that giant ball dropped on my toe. That'd be a great experience.
It's not all that's going to crop up if I play it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got a good stomach, you know.
So. All right, good.
So I'm perfectly willing to discuss this next story with myself if none of you are watching Doctor Who. Are any of you
I'll
watching?
I'll join you.
I watch Doctor Who. I watch Doctor Who.
Ah, sweet.
It's all right. I'll be over here. It's fine. I'll just be right over here. It's fine.
Star Fury Zeta pointed out the news that Jenna Coleman has announced she's leaving Doctor Who. We don't know if she's going to make it to the Christmas special or if she's done at the end of the regular season this year, but she is gone after this series. She's going to play Queen Victoria in ITV's 8-part series about the early part of Queen Victoria's reign. The Daily Mirror reports that Jenna Coleman's boyfriend, Richard Madden, is at the top of a list of people to possibly replace Peter Capaldi should he decide to leave. Madden, if you don't know, played Robb Stark in Game of Thrones.
So there's been mixed... I've heard mixed things, and I know nothing about her, but there's a faction of you people who really don't like her.
Which side are you guys on? Because I'm a fan of Clara, but I understand the people who don't like her.
Where are you two at?
She's grown on me. I feel like she started very interesting. She was a character that was introduced as a mystery and as kind of a puzzle. And then once that got answered, it was like for a while they were like, and it's her. She's back. It's still her. And they didn't have much more depth to give her. I feel like they have found a stride late last season and going into this one from what I've seen so far, where they've really established that she has learned from the Doctor and she is more capable. And I like that about her. But she hasn't always had the best storylines and she hasn't always been as fleshed out as I would like.
Bo, your take?
Oh, yeah. You know, I realize I got to bow out of this one because I stopped watching around Matt Smith because I fell in love with David Tennant and I just had a hard time moving on.
Yeah, I see.
So I'm a fan of Doctor Who, but I'm out of the loop on this story.
Okay. You head over to Scott's side of the room. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, it's okay over here. It's fine over here. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, I hope Peter Capaldi doesn't leave because I feel like they're just now figuring out how to use him properly. I thought his performance last year was great, but I didn't think they used him well. And I think that's one of the reasons people didn't like Clara, is not that Jenna Coleman was doing a bad job. They just weren't giving her the right things to do. And I think already, just with one episode this season, I can see that they've done much more interesting things with both of them. So I understand Jenna wanting to finally go because she's been there since Matt Smith was around. But I really hope Peter Capaldi sticks it out for longer. Apparently, the problem is that the shooting schedules for Doctor Who are just so intensive, it doesn't leave people time to do much else. Mm. And that's why we keep seeing people leave after only two or three years.
Also, doesn't it, I mean, as a standby observer who hasn't really followed it very well, to me, it seems like it's a rebuilding thing that they'd go through every time there's a new Doctor. There's always a little bit of this, whether it be him directly or people with him or finding all those chemistries. And I remember the first episode or two of the Matt Smith run, and I remember diehard fans going, I don't know if I like this new Doctor or not.
Yeah. It always takes a while.
Yeah. And then they love him.
It took me a long time to warm up to Matt Smith for the same reasons Bo apparently never did. But now he's one of my all-time favorites. I actually really enjoyed Capaldi right away, which is strange, but I do agree. I don't feel like they have found the right voice for him. Until this season, I feel like he's really hit his stride. I feel like Jenna Coleman really hit her stride this season. I feel like it's a really strong start, which of course probably means that by the time she leaves, we're all going to be heartbroken. Like anytime one of these things happens.
Exactly.
Agreed.
Finally, EFC88 noted that Edward Snowden's appearance on Neil deGrasse Tyson's Star Talk podcast had him suggesting that we never have detected alien signals because maybe they're sufficiently encrypted. Snowden said, "You can't distinguish a properly encrypted communication from random behavior."
Yeah.
So we may just be thinking we're looking at the cosmic microwave background radiation and it's encrypted signals from intelligent civilizations far across the galaxy.
Yeah, you're always hearing about Z waves and whether or not those will be the things that we figure out or pull apart. But we can't. Well, if it's encrypted, and that's assuming the concept of encryption is even anywhere near what ours is, either better or worse or different or, you know, something we haven't even never thought of, or even doesn't even obey the normal laws of wherever physics may be involved. So the idea of us having giant dishes to receive that communication, when I read this, made me go, oh yeah, dude, maybe we're just wasting our freaking time. Cause unless they're going to send like, you know, some old record of a guy going, hello, my baby, hello, my darling, or whatever. And then we just get it. Cause we hear it. That's not going to happen like in 1950s, you know, sci-fi serials. The way it's going to be is some thing we've never heard. And the stuff we're sending out, they may have no way to know what the hell that is. So I'm kind of with Snowden. Team Snowden on this one. It's weird.
Didn't, like, we've evolved based on, like, our environment, right? The pressure of our, you know, planet in this environment that we live have made us evolve this way. I have a hard time imagining that on any other planet that all those factors would be so similar that we'd be so close to as to even understand, assuming an equal level of intelligence, whatever that might look like. I find it self-centered to think that they'd even be able to communicate with us. Like,
well, yeah.
I think we're in for something very strange if we find aliens, and it's like it's a case of we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
So you know, yeah, I agree.
It's the same kind of problem with the time too. So if we do get a communication and we do intercept it, and let's say we somehow get lucky and decrypt it, unless there's some other technology at play, likely. We got that message was received in 2015, but sent 2.5 million years ago. from either a society or a civilization that is no longer in existence, or if it is, it's well beyond this now, or they've destroyed themselves, or their planet got blown up, or their sun ran out, or, you know, like, even if you get it, it's like finding, it's like getting tickets to a play you really wanted to go to 3 days after it closed. And so that's how I feel about it. We're never going to get anything that's like on time. Nobody's going to go, hey, Earth, what's up, man? We saw you and you guys are awesome. Give us a call back. It doesn't work that way.
I mean, there's a lot of discussion of whether space travel is actually possible. If we could even bridge the distances between civilizations. But I think if that is possible, and there's a lot of people that argue that it is, there's ways to bridge light years. That is more likely to be a contact scenario than detecting communication, because this Snowden thing blew my mind. I'm like, well, yeah, of course. Like, there'll be a small window where civilizations will accidentally leak all of their information. Then they'll want to encrypt it for internal reasons. And also the Stephen Hawkings of their civilization and the Elon Musks will say, hold on, we shouldn't be advertising our presence to possibly hostile aliens should they exist. So you start encrypting your communications for that reason. I mean, encrypt all the things, right?
Yeah.
It's just good policy for so many reasons. So yeah, I think it's fairly impossible to detect alien civilizations if you think about it that way.
Yeah, the only way to truly detect them is if they have a way to just come here and blow us up, and by then it's too late. Right?
Well, they might not blow us up. Well, they may not. They might just want to trade.
They may not. You're right. But
they might want to eat us.
Yeah, they may want to eat us.
Or use us as
alien sharks. It's space sharks.
They might just want to Netflix and chill with us.
We will trade your nutritious man flesh for our space granite. And we'll say, well, wait, that's us. And then they'll say, oh, sorry. And then just eat us. I'm telling you, there's no good ending to this story.
It's a cookbook.
Take a selfie before you get eaten and send it back to Earth so we can prepare it.
Too dangerous. I'm just going to eat by a shark first.
Exactly. All right, we're gonna jump to the pop quiz. But before we do, another tease. So myself, Tom, Jenny, Dave, some names here at the Current Geek Master Studios, have been putting our heads together over the last couple of weeks talking about the future of Current Geek. And ways to make you guys even happier that you support the show. And I just wanted to put it out there again that the Current Geek boxes, for lack of a better term just yet, are coming, Tom. They're coming.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you want to say? We could there's no reason not to say anything, I don't think.
We could probably just
say whatever we want.
It's a little in flux. I think people understand that. We're working on, you know, ideas and trying to make this super rad, but people out there that might be familiar with Loot Crate or these kinds of services that send you rad stuff every month, we're making something like that. We figure Current Geek is the ultimate place for it. The stuff we talk about, the things we feature, some of the guests we have on are big providers of these things that we love so much, these physical hard goods, whether they be stickers or pins or action figures or art or whatever it may be. And we're talking about everything. Right now, as we work through this,
we're brainstorming right now, which is why we don't want to describe it too much, because we don't want to promise you something and then go, wait, actually, we can't do that.
Yep.
But the idea is to have a monthly thing that's the kind of stuff you guys love and related to this show and the kinds of stories we do. Like, if it was this month, maybe we would have shoe vomit protectors. As inspired by John.
Oh, SVPs. Yeah. SVPs. I'm familiar with those.
Yeah. And if you're the winner of the mega box, they're going to just ship me to you. And I will just show up at your door and hang out.
While supplies last.
Ask for food. Yeah.
I think there should be selfie sticks in these boxes.
Yeah.
See, right?
Retractable. they'd have to be retractable. But
and stuffed sharks.
We are very excited about this, and it's something we're working hard on. So I just want people to know that it's coming. Always trying to think of ways, well, how can we help the show survive, but also give people cool stuff they want? And this show's been pretty pioneering in that way with our pint glasses we did and our calendars and all that other stuff. We're coming up with some stuff that's more regular outside of the normal sort of show advertising models and show support models, and doing something a little different that benefits you guys. So we'll keep you informed on what happens with that. This episode of Current Geek has been brought to you by Braintree, code for easy online payments. If you're building a mobile app and searching for a good, simple payment solution, check out Braintree. The Braintree V.0 SDK makes it easy to offer multiple payment types. Start accepting PayPal, Bitcoin, Apple Pay, Venmo, cards, and more with one single, simple integration. How about getting $50,000 off in your first transactions? Absolutely fee-free. Go to BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek and try it out today. That's BraintreePayments.com/currentgeek. Now.
You can buy selfie sticks with sharks printed on them.
Oh, that's perfect. Great.
See?
It's a death trap.
That's it.
You'll need to also include like an EULA admonishing you of all responsibilities.
Yes, exactly.
Box
too. Too many pages to fit in the box. All right, here's the pop quiz. Let's do it.
America scores and wins.
All right. Now, music only means one thing and one thing only. It's time for the pop quiz. It's where you guys answer questions in your areas of expertise. In this case, I did it as a theme. You're both going to be answering questions about your favorite movies, which I procured before today's podcast. And I now have questions as assembled and created by one Mike Iceworm Boyd. If you get an answer correctly, if you get it wrong, Tom will score the whole thing. You'll be pitted against each other at the end in a final bloody match to the death. No.
You're going down, John.
He'll just tell you what your score is. All right, so I'm going to start this week with John. John, here's your questions. It is in the area of Empire Strikes Back trivia.
Okay.
Because you love that movie.
You asked me, and I suspected you would have thought I would have studied.
Yeah, and I also, when you said it, I almost assumed it. And then when you said it, I went, that's exactly the movie I would have said. So here it is. First question. What kind of gas do they mine on Bespin? We require more Bespin
I
gas.
I do know this.
Yeah, StarCraft reference.
Why can't I think of it?
And the answer is not... I can't think of his name. It's
Tabana.
Not,
it's a Tabana gas facility.
Lando farts. Oh, Tabana, you're saying.
Yes.
The Copacabana. Let's find out if you're right. That is correct. Tabana gas is correct.
Ooh, it was nicely done.
Yeah. Require more Tabana gas. Name the six bounty hunters that are brought in to track down the Millennium Falcon.
All right. We got Boba Fett.
Got it.
IG-88.
Got it.
Bosk.
Okay.
Dengar.
Okay.
Zuckuss.
Uh-huh.
And 4LOM or 4LOM.
Holy shite.
Yeah, you get a 2-point holy shite bonus.
All right. What are the odds of successfully navigating an asteroid field?
Oh my gosh. Numbers.
Yeah, numbers.
I didn't plan for numbers. Mm. Just, you know what? Never tell me the odds.
All right. You're close. That's part of the quote, but it's 3,720-1 or never tell me the odds, he says.
Yeah, so, no, yeah, absolutely never tell me the odds is
right.
The correct answer.
He gets a point then.
Definitely
there
you get go. A point for that.
All right. Nice job. What part of Hoth, don't mind Tom scoring. This is just how it goes. You guys have, Bo, you've heard the show since episode one. You know how crazy this can get.
Yeah.
What part of Hoth are the Imperial Walkers first spotted at? It's the way this sentence reads. They come in and they tell the princess and that guy from that episode of Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, they say Imperial Walkers have been spotted in section 47. I don't know.
Incorrect. If this was Star Trek, that would be true because everything's 47 in Star Trek. But it's the answer is the North Ridge.
Oh, the North Ridge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like 47.
Yeah, where Kevin
what
Costner.
What you didn't know, yeah. North Ridge is in sector 47.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's a lie, so you lose a point for the lie penalty.
Awesome. I was hoping that was coming. All right, next question.
Sorry about that. It's just the rules.
Who is Luke's gunner in the Battle of Hoth?
Dak.
Do you know his last name for bonus points?
No, but I can tell you the actor also played Boba Fett in a scene where Jeremy Bullock couldn't play him.
Boba Fett? All right, you're correct on both counts, but also he dies, and his last name is Ralter.
You would have gotten a bonus point had you pronounced it Dak!
Dak! Oh, that poor guy. He has
a tough time.
He's a smoky husk. How long does Yoda say he has trained Jedis when he initially refuses to train Luke? More numbers.
I know, I'm so bad with numbers.
Me too.
This is the problem.
I would lose.
Is it 900?
You are so close. 800 is the correct answer.
He had to go that first 800 or that first 100 years before he started training.
That's true.
Eight tenths of a point.
Oh, yeah, there you go. All right. According to Yoda, what
800
does
800 years?
According to Yoda, what does a Jedi not crave?
Adventure, excitement.
You are correct. That is absolutely correct.
That is a 2-point bonus. Would have also accepted Klondike Bar.
I, for a second, thought this was typoed and said adventure and excrement, but it says excitement.
Well, you know, Jedi don't seek that necessarily either, but...
Yeah, depends on the Jedi.
Excrement.
You seek adventure.
A Jedi seeks not these things.
What attack pattern does Luke tell the other snowspeeders to take when fighting the Imperial walkers?
Delta?
You are correct. Attack pattern Good Delta. God. Nicely done.
Delta attack pattern gets you there.
Way to go. We will score you up here in a minute. But before that, Bo, it's your turn. How are you feeling? You good? You ready?
I'm going to lose. John had to like try really hard to get one wrong.
Yeah. Already a lack of confidence penalty of a half point.
Well, I cheated in your case. It's not a movie. Well, it's a television series that you are incredibly in love with and have seen it reportedly like 5 times. And that would be Community Trivia, the show Community.
Yeah. I saved season 5 because when they said they were going to cancel it, I sent Dan Harmon a picture of me crying and I told him to show that to the NBC executive.
Yeah, and they did. No.
And he didn't confirm it, but I'm pretty sure that's what got the show back.
Oh, of course.
On.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Do I get any points
for
that?
No.
Yeah. We actually get a full point putting you back ahead.
Yeah.
For guilting Dan Harmon.
You didn't get dinged with the pandering point loss, which usually sometimes comes up on here.
No,
so.
You can't pander to Dan Harmon, actually.
It's he's unpanderable. He's pander. Resistant.
Yeah. He's been resistant.
Let's see. What are we doing here? Question one. Here you go. Abed has 4 movie posters in his room. They are Back to the Future, Stand By Me, E.T. Name the 4th movie poster.
Kick Puncher.
You are incorrect. It is Vibes.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. Vibes. Is that a movie?
It's a movie.
I have no idea.
I've never heard of it. What actor was Dan Harmon and Chris McKenna's first choice to play Buzz? These are hard.
Who's Buzz?
Yeah, who is Buzz? I don't know who Buzz is. Buzz?
Buzz?
There must be a character named Buzz.
Buzz.
I read ahead.
I'm
going to
play the 5th on this
trivia
one.
Into Buzz.
I read ahead to make sure this isn't like Toy Story trivia, but it's it says it's that. All right, you're going to plead the 5th on that one? It is Ray Liotta. Ray Liotta. You may have seen his brain in that Hannibal movie.
And you know who played Buzz Hickey? Mm. Jonathan Banks.
Buzz.
Yeah, you know, so I think he just lost that point. for forgetting Mike.
I forgot all about Mike.
I just thought he was Mike the whole time. I knew his name was.
you just pretend it was a crossover? Is that your deal?
Oh, good. Well, Mike showed up here, too.
Yeah.
He's just Mike in Community. Anyway. All right. I got it wrong.
Next one. Here you go. What year did Community premiere?
I don't know. I watched it all on Netflix, so...
I bet Netflix knows.
Yeah, I'll bet they know. 2009 is the correct answer.
No, he actually gets a point for a correct answer. It doesn't matter. I watched it on Netflix.
That's a good point.
It's called the timelessness bonus.
Yeah, we live in the future. Oh, when do you guys see the actual... Well, never mind. I'm going to give something away. I don't want to. Something Tom's working on. That's all I'll say. In an early script, he meant script, of the pilot, what was Jeff Winger's original surname?
I didn't read the pilot script, the secret script. Screw this question. Next.
Crocker is the correct answer. Crocker.
Quarter point hilarious anger bonus, though.
Yeah, that was good.
I'm trying to get whatever points I can without knowing any answers.
Doing good.
Here's one for you. Abed once impersonated what TV character to try and impress Annie? I'll give you a hint. It's a show that recently ended.
Oh, John Hamm from Mad Men.
You are
Donald Draper.
You are correct. Nicely done. I would have accepted John Hamm, but Donald Draper is correct.
John Hamm. Sounds delicious.
John Hamm. Sorry, John.
And cheese.
You know, I'm just so used to hearing it, Scott.
John Hamm and cheese. Don Hamm and cheese. We could come up with a thing. Anyway, let's pitch that pilot. What company was originally in talks to produce the 6th season of the show?
I believe it was Netflix.
You are so...
Netflix, yeah. I'm going with Netflix.
All right, you are so wrong.
Amazon.
It is Hulu is the correct answer. It never happened. However, Yahoo stepped in and produced the 6th season. So originally Hulu was going to do it. By the way, man, if I had a turnaround on Hulu, I hated that service. Now this no commercial thing, I freaking love it. And I don't feel like it's just the commercials. There's something else. I can't put my finger on it. Anyway, second to last question. What Star Trek actor was originally being considered to play Pierce Hawthorne? I kind of wish this would have happened.
I don't know the answer to this question either. Chevy Chase.
Captain Chase from TOS. No, Patrick Stewart was being considered to play Pierce Hoffman.
I'm so glad it was Chevy Chase.
Yeah. I think Patrick Stewart could have been pretty fun, though, in a very different way. Very different way. But not unlike he does on, like, you know, Major Dad, or not Major Dad.
Major Dad.
American Dad? Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Is that
American
it?
Dad.
Major Dad. What is this, 89? What's wrong with me? Final question. In what season does the Dungeons & Dragons episode take place?
Oh, season 2.
You are correct. Nicely done. Tom, add them up. How'd they do?
All right. Good tallies. Good tallies. Bo, you ended up with a 2.75. Very respectable. But John, man, 7.8.
Jeez,
well done.
Jeez, that's score of the year, I think. I don't think anyone's gotten that high.
Only we kept records.
Yeah. No one's gotten that high before.
Smoke weed every day.
Get it? What I was doing there with the weed?
No, I don't understand. What does yard weeds have to do with marijuana?
Yeah, yard weeds. You know,
so can I get one of those selfie sticks to go commit seppuku?
Yeah, is that what it's called?
What is it?
Seppuku.
Sepulcher.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to go kill myself because I've dishonored my family and
You did well. You did well.
It's called selfie cur when you do that. By the way,
get it.
Okay, I'll shut
up. He's a '60s ad agent. She's a cop without a beat. It's John Hamm and Cheese.
That's pretty good. I would watch that show.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's time for Forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment on this show. And it's an idea that we talk about where it's, you know, future stuff. Water wars and artificial meat and that sort of thing. And when's it coming and how soon and all that. Who wrote this one? Is this you, Bo?
Yeah, I suggested this week.
Tell us what you got here. I want to hear this from the horse's mouth here.
Okay, so I have this thing that I'm known for. Well, not really known for, but I'm constantly preaching the gospel of our future hive mind. Mm. So I don't think it's as likely that we'll be traveling space as we'll be traveling inside each other's minds. Whoa. I think the most fascinating thing is the idea of actually two people sharing their mind in, like, the most connected way possible. So today's question is, would you give up your body to become a being of pure energy and live as a part of a larger consciousness of, like, wisdom and in efficiency and, like, community with other human beings? There's a lot of benefits. Like, we drain less of Earth's resources. Like, we'd have to keep whatever it is keeping the energy going, but we'd probably be more efficient that way. We could become immortal because our bodies won't die. We're just energy. And space travel might be easier if we can somehow figure out how to shoot ourselves electricity style across space.
So what? So I. If will there have to be living hosts though that decide not to go this route? That will be our.
There may need to be a cast of people that help maintain mm-hmm. the enlightened ones, mm-hmm. but I don't know.
All right, so I like.
Let's
this
not worry
idea.
About slavery in this episode.
this is a great question because I always think think about becoming a being of pure energy. I always imagine it's a natural evolution, right? Like. Mm-hmm. And that's the way you see it depicted a lot of time. Like in Star Trek Voyager, you just turn into a being of pure energy. What if it was a choice? Like you had to choose. Like you can stay where you are, mm-hmm. or you can go through the conversion process, one-way conversion process. I want to become the being of pure energy. Mm-hmm. Like I love the idea, but I kind of want it to just happen. I don't know if I could make the choice because
okay.
I'm so attached to being corporeal.
How about this though? How about I got a good solution, and then John, I want to hear your take on this. So what if we meet in the middle and we say, like Old Man's War, okay? That book, John Scalzi's book, fantastic book, freaking loved it. Yeah, I've only read fantastic. The first one. So good though. People the crux of that story, man, this kind of gives something away in case people read it. But let's just say, well, no, now I have to. So here's the deal. You get to old age. We'll just apply it to what we're talking about. Let's say we get to old age, and let's say that age is 75. Doctor says, ugh, met tumor. You're not going to make it. Looks like that's grown and spread, and you probably got 4 months.
It's not a tumor. It actually is a tumor.
Yeah, it is a tumor, Mr. Schwarzenegger. Then you get to maybe it's still a choice, but you basically get to say, all right, I want to be enrolled in the public consciousness program or whatever.
So wait a minute. If it's live in pain or die... or become a being of pure energy, you just made it really easy.
Be a pure energy. That's my whole point. Everybody would default
to it.
Totally
changed my mind on this.
Everybody would default to it. And so when you're getting on and it's now a time to make a choice, and maybe you need to be under, maybe the law is that you have to have some actual peril, some future thing, a stage 4 cancer, something that you can't get around, then you can say, yes, I hereby sign that I would like to be pure energy. You sit in the chair, they pull it out of you. Now we have a place where a planet, I mean, it doesn't help your resources problem, but it's a planet where we can still have these corporeal beings and they get to live full, rich lives. And then on the table when they're about out, they get sucked into this thing. And then that slowly gets to build and really has no limit. So you could just add to it forever, thus adding to the benefits of having a giant hive mind like that. What do you think, John?
Well, I think it's very interesting because, and I want to make it very clear, I'm going to talk from a philosophical perspective, not a religious one, just so anybody out there who, right, you know, potentially might not want to hear what I'm about to say, just understand I'm cool with whatever you want to believe. But how do we know this isn't the natural state when we die anyway?
We don't.
We look at what philosophers have been thinking about for a long time, and there's always the thought and the idea of, hey, everything can be measured, everything has a physical element to it, but thought seems to go beyond that. The concept of thinking and imagining and feeling and all of that is somewhat limitless. And therefore, if it's somewhat limitless, it must exceed beyond the physical plane. And so maybe when we, you know, shed off this husk that is our body, maybe this is exactly what we get. Maybe it's not a program we even have to opt into. Maybe we've all opted into it already.
So
actually, no, yeah. Wait, I know. Heaven is encrypted. That's why we haven't been able to find it.
Heaven's
it's
encrypted.
Actually, it's energy and it's encrypted. John, that's brilliant.
That is kind of brilliant.
Now, it might be just that heaven's encrypted and that's why we're, you know, not sure.
I love that idea that it's encrypted. That is a really funny concept. It's something you could do with that. I got to do a cartoon or something. But anyway.
Show us your private key.
How do I get a private key, oh Lord?
Purgatory is just a man in the middle attack. I knew it.
It's the pearly gates, but there's a great big McAfee logo right on the front of it.
Well, it's the pearl e-gates.
Oh, the pearl e-gates.
We've been misinterpreting
the pearl. So heaven's written in pearl? Are you telling me heaven's written in pearl?
Of course it is.
That's terrible. They're going to convert to what? Ruby on Rails at some point? Or that's hell, actually.
Yeah.
Hell's Ruby on Rails. This is terrible. We're in Pun City. No, but I would say this just to kind of throw this back at you, Bo, and that is this. If John's right, if his theory's right, that maybe, just maybe, this is the next stage, and let's just play with that philosophy for a second, then trying to do it now would be a huge waste of time, resources, and science, because we'll get there and realize, oh crap, this was already happening. We didn't have to build this giant supercomputer to help us do it, or this huge new technology or something. Are you worried about that at all?
No, because we just don't know. Because it's encrypted, we'll never find it. So we have to do it anyway. Mm. And we're going to do it. And then once we do it, we'll discover the encrypted heaven. And then there'll be a war of the heavens.
Yeah.
I think I see the future now. I think this conversation has really sort of brought everything together. But in all seriousness, even taking it back a little bit from the heaven side of things, I really think that you think about the people you love in your life.
Yeah.
And you think about how close you are to them, and then yet you're still alone. Like, you're still an individual. And if there was some way to be closer to them than we currently can, like, forget the need to eat or cuddle or these human sort of things. Like, what if sharing your mind, literally, like having your thoughts swim with the thoughts of another person,
your
the person that you love.
My thoughts.
Is there something beautiful about that? And that makes me feel like we should work towards that.
What if that means everybody?
Yeah, that's scary, though. Well, we want
to love everybody.
Yeah,
that's
but we don't.
Point,
but we do. You know? But we don't want to love the guy that just killed 50. Everyone on a plane to Ghana. Let's go. So here's an idea. This is a bad joke, but bear with me. Could heaven send a DDoS attack to hell, or a distributed denial of Satan attack? That's pretty good, right? That's all right. Oh gosh. All right. Well, that
ends the Satan did the denial.
Oh. Well, then it'd be a
a DDoS comes from hell.
Oh, okay, but then it'd be devil's denial of service. still DDoS.
Distributed denial of sainthood.
Oh, that's even better.
That was good.
Nice Catholic twist to it on Pope Week. That's Pope Week on the Discovery Channel. Attack of the Popes. All right.
Doing a pop album, I hear.
There, really. That's it. Forecast is always fun. And also, I never mentioned this, but when we read your feedback, part of that can be you guys sending in your suggestions for forecasts, because we wouldn't mind getting some listeners' ones as well.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
That feedback email is currentgeek@gmail.com. What else? Let's do an email. We got one from Terry, and I know it because at the end it says, thanks, you can call me Terry. So I'm going to assume, A, that's not the real name, and sure, no problem, we'll call you Terry.
Thanks, Dick Cheney.
I know Tom is not a fan of these, but do you guys think that FPS games will make a big comeback in the competitive esports scene? A long time ago, they were all that there was in esports at the time. Do you think it's time for that to make a big comeback? Thanks, and you can call me Terry. So it's good you guys are on. The three of us are playing quite a bit of esports. Tom's playing a lot of Hearthstone. We're starting a new show called Core, which is all about Heroes of the Storm, which is very much trying to establish itself as an esports attraction. And the esports market seems to be crowded with RTSs and things like them, MOBAs, for example. But you also see Counter-Strike GO is kind of killing it right now. They're like often number two, number three on Twitch. And they've got big tournaments coming up. They're also part of that new TBS deal where they're going to start with that game and have big tournaments on freaking basic cable, which is just crazy. And while we'll probably talk a lot about this stuff on the Core, let's start, I guess, John, what do you think of the idea of the first-person shooter in light of things like Overwatch coming out? Do you think those have a chance to take the stage again?
Well, let me first say I'm a person who watches Netflix, so that makes me ancient by today's standards.
Old man.
But I think that first-person shooters are going to have a problem with being in the esports scene, at least depending on how they depict it. Because I think that for people who engage in it and like it and dig it, there's nothing that bad about watching an esport of a first-person shooter. When you are asking to get a broader audience to watch someone who has the barrel of a gun sticking out the bottom of the screen and shoot other people repeatedly, I think you're making a stretch. You're also kind of confirming a lot of bias and thoughts about what gaming is and what interests gamers. I think that part of the reason MOBAs and games that have that isometric view are so popular is because, sure, all those games have violence in them, but there's a detachment from it. There's, we're just watching something for fun quality.
Yeah, it's also a football quality to it because, or soccer, international football, where the camera is up at that angle. The way they view those games, they can kind of pull out and pull in and look at it like a thing. You can even, like John Madden style, circle a character and say, all right, what he meant to do is go over by that tower and this other guy came and pushed down here. Like, you can go full-on sports casting with that stuff, because it's already sort of set up like a camera might catch a football game or something. So why couldn't they, though? This needs to be part of the games, but let's say Overwatch comes out and it's all first-person view for the players and they're going 5-on-5 or whatever, but you pull that camera out because the engine supports it, and now you're essentially looking at a MOBA field in a way where you've got little dudes running around doing the things they do, and you can occasionally switch to their first-person view, especially for replays and that sort of thing, but watch it from this greater sort of field angle. Does that help the solution a little bit? Things they didn't have with Quake and Unreal and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps. But I think another thing to consider is, what's the metric for it coming back? Are we saying that success is being on mainstream television and acceptance amongst, you know, people that, you know, maybe only have a passing interest in it? Or are we saying, like, hey, a ton of people are going to filter into Twitch and watch YouTube, VODs of the tournaments and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Because if that's success, I would argue they already have it. It already is very successful and only growing.
Yeah, and they're essentially doing that with Counter-Strike. Bo, any thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, competitive esports are popular for in the niche that it is popular in. I think if you're talking about mainstream, then you need to make it a viewer sport. And I think the reason why Hearthstone and MOBAs work so well in StarCraft is because there's no obstruction of view. Now, if you even had a third-person camera in a first-person shooter, there's a lot of hidey holes, a lot of geometry and things in the way. It's not designed for viewership, and it's so twitchy like even with Heroes, if you need to have people who don't play the game who are interested in watching it, who can read what's going on. And a shooter game with everyone jumping everywhere and it being super twitchy is very hard for a non-competitive player to follow.
Yeah.
So I think we need a slow first-person shooter game. Like, things can be dramatic in a game for a viewer without the need for it to be twitchy and 1,000 things per second. And I think it requires strategic decisions on a vector of teamwork rather than twitch skills. And I think you can have a first-person shooter. I think we're waiting for those people to design that game. Mm. And I'm kind of hoping it dovetails with Oculus so that the esports competitors actually have to wear the Oculus headsets or the VR headsets.
Yeah.
And then we watch it from a third-person angle on our TV screens, and it needs to be dramatic for us, just like all sports, or otherwise.
Absolutely. There's a reason why all this esports sounds like real sports. So, Tom, if let's say this deal works out well for Counter-Strike on TBS, because that'll be a real test for this as a first-person shooter as an esport, whether it works on a large cable network like that, big test. So let's say that works, and it's super compelling, and you watch some matches, and you're like, dang, will that turn you around on first-person shooters?
No.
Oh, damn it.
Because my problem isn't with getting excited about the stories. I mean, there's first-person shooters that have great stories. There's some that don't. It's not about the content. It's not about seeing people do it well.
Right.
It's just about the fact that I have really slow hand-eye coordination.
All right. Well, then, so like real football, I can watch and enjoy it, but not be great at it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. I might watch this TBS thing and be like, woo, I'm a Counter-Strike fan watching.
Yeah.
But yeah. And maybe when we get first-person shooters in VR, where it's less about trying to remember what buttons to push and training yourself to remap your mind, maybe I'll change my mind then.
Yeah.
That's the best I can hope.
All right. That's all we could ask. More on that probably very likely tomorrow on Core, the inaugural episode of the brand new Heroes of the Storm podcast with me, Bo, and John, and we're all very excited about it. You guys were awesome guests. Thank you so much for being here. You guys are fantastic.
Thank you for having us. It was very exciting for me.
Well, it's fantastic. As a longtime fan from episode one, it was an honor to have you here.
I hope the future episodes go well. I won't be alive after this. I've got to go commit the selfie Sudoku.
You did too well that you're going to have to come back on now. So
all right.
Yeah, sorry.
Don't be self.
The fans demand it.
Selfie mutilation or whatever. Why don't you tell us, Bo, where people can find you? What's the best place to look?
On Twitter at Bo Schwartz. So you can find out all the things I'm up to there. Cause I'm doing Core and I do another little show called Good, Bad, or Bull Beep. So you can find that all on my Twitter feed.
That's fantastic. John, what's up, man? What I know you got a lot of things going on. What would you like people to know about?
Oh yeah, all sorts of stuff. Easiest way is just follow me on Twitter. It's at John JON _ Jagger, JAGGER, not related to Mick.
No.
And I'll post everything there. I host Azeroth Roundtable on the NVIDIA stream with you tomorrow, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Yep. And, of course, Core, we've talked about a little bit.
Yep. Not currently live, but that may change. We're going to start out just building the show, and then we'll see. Maybe some live stuff in the future. Definitely live games and things. Very, very excited to bring that to everybody tomorrow. So tune back in. Details for that show can be found at heroesforyou.com or simply go to frogpants.com/core. Or even better, follow us on Twitter, Core Heroes. Tom, you got anything else going on?
No, just a reminder, if you're interested in space fiction that's got a post-apocalyptic bent and you want a great cover by Scott Johnson, check out Citadel 32 at tommerrittbooks.com.
I like space fiction. I also like space friction, if you know what I mean. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here and listening, especially you, chat room. Thank you for being here live. We're always happy to be interacting with you. Big thanks to our guests again. And who else do we thank? We just thank everyone. Everyone's great. We'll tell you more about those boxes coming up soon. Currentgeek.reddit.com is our subreddit. Currentgeek.com for all other things. So go check those out for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time. Only old men watch Netflix.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the biggest piece of music to hit the public domain of copyright, perhaps in history, which happened thanks to a court decision earlier this week. That song, of course, is...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
On Tuesday, a California federal court ruled that Warner Music Group no longer holds a valid copyright in this iconic Happy Birthday song. This will end a licensed revenue stream from filmmakers and other users of about $2 million a year, thanks to it costing about $1,500 to acquire a single license from Warner for this property. The decision was based on new fact findings that the company which Warner acquired these rights from in 1988 had only ever gotten a copyright in the melody, not the words, and the melody is too old to be covered by current copyright terms. Thus, one of the biggest licensed properties in music is now in the public domain, subject to Warner's appeal, of course. But other than the appeal, there are still a couple of interesting questions left. First, this decision will likely cause further scrutiny in chain of title documents that explain how IP rights like copyrights were sold and transferred all the way from original owners all the way to the current owner. The documents always win in the legal field. Second, this decision makes the lyrics of Happy Birthday into an orphan work, which is a term commonly applied to works that are not technically in the public domain, but nobody can figure out who actually owns the right. As copyright terms have extended to the life of the author plus 70 years for individuals and 95 to 120 years for corporations, that makes it very hard to find rightful owners of copyrights that do exist on very old works. This is a problem that grows more and more with copyright term extensions. One wonders how this iconic property joining the ranks of orphan works will affect the debate the next time extension of copyright terms comes up at Congress. The bottom line is, we can all finally sing Happy Birthday on YouTube videos without risking a nasty license demand, and that's a good thing in the face of the crazy long copyright term in the US. Until next time, don't feel too bad for Warner, as this week they also got another federal court ruling that the Batmobile is a protectable character under copyright. Of course, it will likely be hard to make $2 million a year licensing just the Batmobile, but holy copyright law, Batman.
Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hey guys, just a reminder, we talked about it on the show, just one more reminder, if you want to go get subscribed early, for absolutely free, of course, to Core, the new podcast about all things Heroes of the Storm with myself, Beau, and John. Make sure you go to heroes4u.com or frogpants.com/core. One or the other, I'll get you there. Core Heroes on Twitter. Our first episode is tomorrow, the 26th of September, 2015. Can't wait to get it out there for you. Subscribe now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, including your phone apps. It's all good. RSS feed and everything. Again, heroes4u.com. Go check it out now. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.